Welcome to the Gen Z Stoic Podcast and this week's Seneca Stoic Reading. I'm your co-host, Ren, and this week we're covering letter 8, which for Seneca covers more on isolation and seclusion, as well as gifts of chance and possessions and indifference. And so this letter is entitled A Philosopher's Perspective on Possessions. So Seneca begins, "Are you of all people," you write, "really telling me to avoid the crowd, to retire from the world and find contentment in a good conscience? Where are those Stoic rules of yours that call on a man to die in harness? Come now, do I really give you the impression that I advocate a life of inactivity? I have only buried myself away behind closed doors in order to be able to be of use to more people. With me, no day is ever whiled away at ease. I claim a good part of my nights for study. I have no time for sleep. I just succumb to it, keeping my eyes at their work when they are heavy-lidded and exhausted from lack of rest. I have withdrawn from affairs as well as from society, and from my own affairs in particular. I am acting on behalf of later generations. I am writing down a few things that may be of use to them. I am committing to writing some helpful recommendations which might be compared to the formulas of successful medications, the effectiveness of which I have experienced in the case of my own sores, which may not have been completely cured, but have at least ceased to spread." So there's a lot, really, to unpack here, and there's some important context to consider. First, we have to consider that these are a series of letters, and in his last letter, he talked to Lucilius about avoiding crowds and withdrawing into yourself and remaining isolated. So this first part is really him rebuking whatever Lucilius's response was, which was probably, you know, oh, you're supposed to be a Stoic monk where you don't go out and you're always isolated, and that's not necessarily the case. And, you know, inactivity, as Seneca mentions. And secondly is Seneca's own retirement. Now, these letters were mostly written while he was retired, and being a very famous and, you know, a person of high status in Roman society, Seneca has to defend himself, as you can see in this letter. He has to defend himself for his actions, and he does so by saying that he is acting on behalf of later generations. And this is what I love about Seneca. Seneca was a very flawed man, and a lot of the Stoic ideals we talk about, he was nowhere close to. But that doesn't mean that we can't learn a lot from them. Obviously, I have, and many, many other people have, especially as it relates to Stoicism. But Seneca here, he's saying that it's much better for him to use his status and his education and the fact that he can write very well to help future generations than to just go out and display his status and, you know, go to the Senate and give somebody a recommendation or go put his, you know, his stamp of approval on something, you know, like we see a lot of politicians do where it's kind of lip service and they're just like, look at my status and exemplifying the power they have. He's using his impact and his gifts for future generations because he realized that this is a much larger impact. However, my favorite part of the passage that I just read is him advocating for a life that, well, yes, he's buried away behind closed doors. No day is ever whiled away at ease. Another translation for that is he's never idle. There's not a day where he takes a break. And how often do we see that? I'm on spring break currently, and I'm even guilty of, you know, you get worn down in a college semester, you come home and you want to play video games or just read or do nothing for a couple of days just to decompress. That's not, you know, and I just said I'm guilty of that, but that's not, and I can even acknowledge, it's not the best way to really approach a situation. Just because maybe you're burnt out or something doesn't mean you just take a break. How often do we see when we're studying or we're at work and we have a task to get done? There's so many things we'd rather do. We'd rather go clean, or we'd rather, you know, oh, I can take a 30-minute break to go watch this TV show or play video games, and then I'll get back to it. And we never get back to it. That's ultimately, I mean, you know, that happens a lot. If we decide we take a break, that break turns into a longer break, and turns into an extended break, and then it turns into, oh, I never got this thing done that I was supposed to get done. And in a present era with so many distractions on your phone, television, computer, so many electronic devices that, you know, take your attention away like that, it's only going to get worse. What we need to do as a society is train ourselves to not accept these breaks. These breaks are only acceptable once you have every single thing you set out to do in that day done. And that's where I think kind of contemporary Stoicism is a little bit less harsh, is while Seneca is saying here that, you know, there's not a day where there's room for a break, there is. And that's kind of that wisdom to discern that, where you say, you know, I made a list for myself. These are 8 things I had to get done, or I'm at my job, and these are the 5 tasks that I've been assigned to do today. I did all of those. Now, maybe your job, you can't slack off. You might get fired. But if you're, you know, you're like me, take for example your spring break, 8 things you get done, you know, like clean your room, make your bed, do something for the podcast, update your resume. You get all these things done, then sure, go enjoy yourself, take a break for like an hour. There's nothing wrong with that. But too often we kind of separate our things. We're like, oh, I get a little bit done and then a break, and then a little bit done and then a break. That's not effective. It's not an effective solution. So don't view life in that way. And again, another key insight here is that when we retire, our generation, you know, and maybe who knows if we retire or not, but, you know, 40 years when you're an older person, or you isolate, or you live a really secluded lifestyle, it's not really an excuse for you to distance yourself from humanity and say, oh, I only need to improve myself. Because again, we live in a society where it's our responsibility to improve that society in some way, shape, or form. So even if you're isolated, even if you're living in a secluded lifestyle, even if you're retired, there are ways that you can find to make an impact in your community, in society, and you should absolutely do that. And the way Seneca did that here is writing letters from a Stoic, which, you know, he thought he's acting on behalf of later generations. He predicted that pretty correctly, as 2,000 years later, we are discussing these written works. So Seneca continues, "I am pointing out to others the right path, which I have recognized only late in life, when I am worn out with my wanderings. Avoid, I cry, whatever is approved of by the mob, and things that are the gift of chance. Whenever circumstance brings some welcome thing your way, stop in suspicion and alarm. Wild animals and fish alike are taken in by this or that inviting prospect. Do you look on them as presents given you by fortune? They are snares. Anyone among you who wishes to lead a secure life will do his very best to steer well wide of these baited bounties, which comprise yet another instance of the errors we miserable creatures fall into. We think these things are ours, when in fact it is we who are caught. That track leads to precipices. Life on the giddy level ends in a fall. Once, moreover, prosperity begins to carry us off course, we are no more capable even of bringing the ship to a standstill than of going down with the consolation that she has been held on her course, or of going down once and for all. Fortune does not just capsize the boat. She hurls it headlong on the rocks and dashes it to pieces." So, Seneca, this is pretty clear language here. It doesn't take a lot of interpretation. Chance, luck, fortune, whatever you want to call it, is not something that we should rely upon. In Rome, this was represented by the goddess Fortuna. So the goddess Fortuna is kind of very similar in appearance, I guess, to Lady Justice, where it can be blind, so sometimes she's depicted with a blindfold, but she also has a lot of different gifts. You can look into Fortuna if you want to. This isn't really a mythology lesson, but the important aspect of this is that Romans and Greeks, who also had their goddess of chance, viewed it as blind. It was this blind arbiter who kind of fairly, well, maybe not fairly, but randomly threw out good fortune and good luck. You know, they worshiped, some people worshiped them. Seneca and the Stoics obviously were not a part of the group that worshipped Fortuna. And why would you? Why would you want to depend on blindness and just this random distribution of things for your success? If we cling to chance and luck, our success really, similarly to Fortuna, is blind. And it's very fleeting because, you know, if you rely on good luck to get you to the top, bad luck has to come at some point. We always say you can't go through life and all you experience are good things. A, that life would not be very fulfilling, but B, that's just, it's not how nature works, it's not how fate works, it's not how any of these concepts work. And I like the goddess Fortuna as a personification of it because, you know, we kind of just now think it's like nature and we similarly think it's blind. But this personification of literally somebody with a blindfold on just tossing out good fortune and good luck is really, it's a good metaphor. However, you know, what's the alternative, right? If we don't cling to fortune, we don't cling to good luck or any of these things. We cling to hard work and dedication, living purposefully, a lot of these Stoic virtues, right? Because that's direct. If you put hard work in the gym, you see direct results. If you put hard work in school, your grades improve, direct result. If you just rely on chance, you say, oh, well, I won't study and hopefully I'll just guess correctly. And you do well once, like, sure, you feel good. It's rewarding in the moment. But then when you go fail the final, not so rewarding anymore because it was fleeting. It was blind, you know. That day you woke up and you guessed well. But if you put in hard work, dedication, you study, or you go to the gym a lot, or you work really hard at your craft, whether, you know, a sport, or you take a lot of lessons in how to play an instrument, you get really good at playing the instrument. So that hard work and that dedication is a lot more permanent, and it's a lot more direct. Seneca takes a hardline stance here on chance, saying avoid it and stay as far away from it as possible. That's not really feasible. good luck is going to find you just as bad luck does. So the strategy is, instead of avoiding it or despising it or getting angry or any of these things, just accept that it found you and it's an indifferent. So if you had good luck on the day, you accept, oh, well, you know, I'm pretty lucky that happened to me. You find $5 on the street, oh, I'm pretty lucky that happened to me. But you don't obviously rely on finding $5 on the street every day, just as you don't rely on not studying for any tests and hoping that just guessing comes through for you. Or you just hope to figure out the instrument, fly by the seat of your pants, not take any lessons, not really practice, and just hope, oh, I kind of know it, so I'll be able to figure it out when I'm on stage. It never works out. So we treat it as a positive indifferent, or a negative indifferent if it's bad luck, but overall an indifferent, where we just need to have the awareness of when something happens to you and it's not a result of your hard work or your efforts, and instead it's just nature and the universe giving you a gift. You don't have to reject it, you don't have to despise it, because that's kind of silly. But you have to acknowledge that this was not the result of my hard work, and so I need to continue working, I need to continue dedicating to my craft. And I can appreciate whatever this gift is, but it's not going to distract me from what truly matters. And I think that's something that Seneca would agree with, even if he takes a more hardline stance in this passage. So he continues, "Cling, therefore, to this sound and wholesome plan of life. Indulge the body just so far as suffices for good health. It needs to be treated somewhat strictly to prevent it from being disobedient to the spirit. Your food should appease your hunger, your drink quench your thirst, your clothing keep out the cold, your house be protection against inclement weather. It makes no difference whether it is built of turf or of variegated marble imported from another country. What you have to understand is that thatch makes a person just as good a roof as gold does. Spurn everything that is added on by way of decoration and display by unnecessary labor. Reflect that nothing merits admiration except the spirit, the impressiveness of which prevents it from being impressed by anything." So another good lesson here, and it's really the philosopher defining human wants versus human needs, right? Human needs, we need a roof over our head. Human want, we want that roof to be as fancy as possible. We want that house to be as big as possible. Human need dictates, you know, I'm hungry, so I need food. Human want says, ooh, that 5-star restaurant that has a big steak looks nice, even if it's very expensive. And I want that. Human need dictates, you know, I'm thirsty, so you need water. Human want dictates, you know, I want Fiji water. Love Fiji water, but, you know, it's a little bit extra. So, again, it boils down to what's necessary versus what's an indifferent. Having a nice house, Seneca had a nice house. Seneca was very wealthy. So it's kind of ironic that he's speaking about this, because he had a lot of these things. And sure, he, you know, lived in poverty from time to time just to see what it was like so he could adapt if he lost all these things. And it's not to say that being wealthy or having a marble roof or these nice possessions is a bad thing. But it's not how we measure what things are worth, right? A thatched roof is just as worthy, just as, you know, worthy of praise and just as valuable as a marble roof, because it meets its function. It's a roof over your head. That's the thing about possessions, is they just have a function. Like a phone. If a phone makes calls, sends texts, then it's just as valuable as some fancy iPhone that has 4 different camera lenses. A flip phone is just as valuable as an iPhone, because they both perform the same function, and they both get the job done. So that's similarly what, you know, a roof or food or water does. So we shouldn't really give any of those qualities merit. So there's nothing wrong with being wealthy. There's nothing wrong with having these nice possessions. But if you're a terrible person and you have these things, having these things don't immediately make you a valuable person. It's the content of your character. It's your spirit. So that's the difference between needs and wants. And what Seneca is saying here is the philosopher, the wise man, only acquires the physical possessions necessary to sustain themselves, right? So you get a roof over your head. You get a job so you can pay to feed your family and give them water and give them clothes, send them to school, right? Buy a car if the time comes for it. They didn't have cars back then, so. But if they did have cars, I'm sure Seneca would have mentioned it. So that's you only acquire the physical possessions necessary to sustain yourself, and you don't worry about getting the next best thing, the next greatest car, the next biggest house that comes on the market, the newest clothing trend. You don't worry about those things. Once you have secured a house and food and water and you can sustain yourself, then the wise man focuses on improving your spirit, which is improving the content of your character. Makes a lot of sense, right? The fools are the ones who are, you know, using stoicism for this hustle culture mindset where they're like, I'm going to drive a McLaren and I'm going to have these nice homes and I'm going to have a bunch of women. Those are fools. Those are fools who want to use philosophy to gain possessions. Wise people want to use philosophy, want to use these lessons to improve their lives, improve themselves, improve their mindset. And that's the difference. It's the key difference highlighting here. So I'm going to cut off a little bit short to, for interest of time. As we leave today's Seneca Stoic reading, I encourage you to do three things. Acknowledge when good luck happens to you, but do not let it distract you from the hard work you're putting in. Focus on your spirit and the content of your character rather than the possessions that those things bring. And accept philosophy as a way to free yourself from the kind of grind and monotony that life currently throws at you. And if you do those three things, just you find in this one letter, I think you'll be a lot happier, and I think your life will be a lot more fulfilling, and you will suddenly give proper value judgments to things, which is a very liberating perspective to have in life. With that being said, this has been this week's Seneca Stoic Reading. Thank you as always for listening, and we will see you next week.